Hello and welcome to the Axiom Insights Learning and Development Podcast. In this series, we focus on best practices for driving performance through learning. And today's conversation focuses on what I would argue is the most fundamental part of learning, communication, more specifically, language. We'll talk about ways that you can ensure that the learning experiences you're developing are able to be understood and experienced as intended by your learners. And so I'm glad to have two guests who are experts on this topic. Nicholas Straza is CEO of Interpro Translation Solutions, and Maria Fregrelius is a project manager also with Interpro. Maria, Nick, great to see you. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Super excited to be a part of this and appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So let's start out with just a definition of terms, because we talk about translation. I think most people understand translation, what that is and what that entails. But we also talk about localization as part of translation of learning content, particularly. Help me understand what the difference is. What are we talking about with those two categories of work?
Sure. And it's definitely a topic that comes up quite frequently where someone is looking for translation or localization, but they get the words intermixed. Probably the simplest way to explain it is translation is more word for word, making sure that the words are accurately translated. Where localization, I like to refer to it as almost taking translation to the next level, adapting the messaging, changing some things that might not be in the source, for example, doing currency conversions or imagery or changing elements of people's names or whatever it might be. So it's almost like taking it, again, to a more adapted approach versus a simple more word-for-word translation, which accurately translates the words, but sometimes the messaging can get lost.
Right. So that's not only looking at the nuances of a regional version of a language, like, for example, Spanish or French. They have, you know, multiple different, you would translate French very differently in Quebec than you would in Paris. So the terminology changes. But I like what you're saying about changing the, it's almost like the cultural references.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Maria, feel free to chime in too.
Yeah, I think localization, like Nick was saying, is taking that cultural context and transferring into the wording, the style of the translation.
So why is this important, I guess? And I know I'm to use the phrase, preaching to the choir here, but why do you think it's important? Where have you seen it have value to localize and not just translate?
I think it's more than anything better understanding and engagement of your audience, because it's known that learners grasp the information better if it's presented in their native language. Also, those familial cultural references help them understand it and motivate them to action. Like, for example, a very simple example can be the dates. Like in the United States, the month, the day. So understanding that in a European setting, if you put the day and the month, is better to understand when that event, for example, is going to happen. Also, I think to be inclusive, to include the learner into the experience of learning and in your content, I think is very important to be accessible to them in their native language, also very important.
So part of it is to be understood, but also I would assume part of it is you want to, you know, make the learner, the audience member, feel like the content is intended for them. So you're taking out things which would be, I would say, dissonant, things that would stand out as saying, well, that's wrong. The date being in the reverse format would seem, you know, if you're talking about the 10th of February and in the US, if you said 10-2, people would think you're talking about October. So if that's disruptive on a couple of levels and distracting. Maybe that's a better word to use, is eliminating distractions.
I definitely think so. And almost to chime in, essentially, you know, the real goal of a perfect localization is where someone in that that speaks that language doesn't know it was translated from English. It was intended for them. That's like the ultimate goal that we'll strive for. The other thing is mistranslations. It could or could really like offend a learner or really hamper their learning abilities. If something, you know, sometimes they're comical. There's a lot of examples out there of really, really big companies that have made mistakes that could have been avoided if they just did translation or localization or took it a little more seriously. It tends to be an afterthought a lot, unfortunately. But in general, like, you know, you can really, really adapt that messaging to someone in their language, and that can go a long way. It also makes them feel, you know, more like the company took the time to really do this right for them. So it almost can help anyone taking the training or a customer feel, wow, this company really, you know, wants me to learn. They took the time to accurately translate this. It's professional. It looks like something, you know, for my country or where I'm from. So, you know, again, those little things can kind of go a long way.
I think it shows and it feels like you belong. And I think that is a very, you know, inclusive and accessibility term these days, that you belong to that company, that you belong to, you know, to the learning experience.
Well, that's true too, because when we talk a lot in learning development broadly about, you know, the contribution of learning to company culture and inclusiveness being a big part of that. And I don't necessarily know if folks are thinking about language and connotations of language as being an element in inclusivity, but I suppose it is.
Indeed.
So I know that Absolutely. We have an example, a clip to show. And Nick, I want to let you set this up, but this is an example of localization in practice.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll introduce this just to say that this podcast is video and audio. So those of you who are listening on the audio only side, I'll say that this clip begins with a title that says, "Hackers don't look like they do in the movies. They're men and women of various ethnicities and speaking different languages." To view the clip, though, go to axiomlearningsolutions.com/podcast. You can find the video version there if you're listening on your audio-only device, or go to YouTube and just search for Axiom Insights, and you'll see the video there. But so, Nick, what are we going to be seeing here?
Sure. Let me give you a little bit of context here. So a client of ours is a company called KnowBefore, and they are the provider of the world's largest security awareness training and simulated phishing platform. KnowBefore really takes localization seriously into the next level. They don't just translate copy. They truly localize the content in their learning, such as character names, imagery, names of organizations, and more. Very global. So in fact, we'd like to show you this video, and it really showcases an example of doing true localization. So KnowBefore, they took the time and the investment to preview their training course for the social engineering red flags, or SERF as they call it, to include actual actors speaking in their native language, instead of just doing a voiceover or captions. They really did it in a very unique way. So I'm really excited to be able to show you this.
That's great. Let's take a look at the clip.
Hi, everyone. I'm...
You didn't really think I was going to tell you my name, did you?
이거부터 시작할게요. 해커가 되는 이유는 뭐죠?
Mind motif?
É o dinheiro.
我编造了一封电子邮件.
Como? Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, WhatsApp, YouTube, WeChat.
そして, Toka!
Moi, c'est un peu ça.
Nous sommes des cybercriminels après tout.
And if you're listening to the audio feed only, you've heard the audio side but haven't seen the video side, axiomlearningsolutions.com/podcast, or look for Axiom Insights on YouTube, and you'll be able to see the video clip in its context as well. So you mentioned earlier, Nick, that you find that translation and localization is oftentimes an afterthought or comes later in the process. And I would infer accurately that you'd advocate for thinking of it earlier on. This being sure. like I assume of when it was embraced a little bit more holistically earlier on. At what stage should translation localization enter the picture, and how do you start approaching the need? How do you define the need for that early on in a learning project?
Sure, sure. Great points. And you know, I believe a lot of organizations just they might have a more visibility on needing to translate. You know, we bumped into a lot of situations where you know, a client didn't know that the learning had to be localized. They had a customer that they that is new in that country. It's a new initiative for them, versus organizations that they know everything needs to be translated, so they are able to keep localization in mind at the design stage. So, you know, we've done some presentations with the Society of Technical Communications, STC, and we got some good feedback there where it's like, you know, if you can write with localization in mind, it's clean writing and learning anyways. So for the English. So I think, you know, again, in general, there's a lot of things someone who's developing a learning program or training or an ILT or a VILT could keep in mind early on. And being able to pull, you know, a partner like us in at the early stages can help us. We can review the storyboard, give some suggestions. Different things can kind of go a long way, like making sure there's enough room on the screen, minimizing text and graphics. If there's voiceover, you know, minimizing the syncing points, if it's like in a tool like Storyline. And then, you know, imagery, you know, adapting the imagery to be more diverse or allowing for budget to, you know, maybe place different imagery in or refilm or whatever it might be. You know, obviously voiceover is always preferred, but might not be allowed by budget. We might have to do captions, which could distract the viewer depending on what you're showing on the screen. So there's a lot of little elements that can come into play. And what's fun about what we do is every language has different nuances. Spanish expands, Arabic's right to left, simplified Chinese shrinks. So it's like a lot of work does go into fully localizing, you know, a training or for a learner. But if we could be brought in earlier on, or if whoever's developing content, if you think it might be translated and you don't know, you know, try to think in terms of this isn't just for the US or English speaking audience. You know, will this phrase translate? You know, we bumped into a lot of different situations where, you know, different types of expressions that make sense here, you know, knock it out of the park, or this is easy as pie, or different things like that. The okay sign, these are things that do not translate very, very well or at all. You need to localize it. But the more of those, you know, marketing is really hard. Marketing type things is where we bump into the most challenges.
Idioms. When you're talking about, guess, more casual, maybe less technical speech, the idioms that you were just give a few examples of, yeah, they are problematic. And Maria, let me ask you, because so if you're working with someone in the development of their content and you're trying to counsel them, how can folks write the original the first draft in English, for example, anticipating translation? What have you seen as things people should look out for? I guess idiomatic expressions would be one of them.
For content, I think there will be the first step that you have to lock before localization is where localization really starts in your content. And what I have used in the past is just flagging, just little flags, what it can be too US-centric that cannot be used in other countries or even in the United States if you are marketing, for example, Hispanics. So I think just little flags that it can be problematic content that can be for example, it's very difficult to translate humor because everybody has different, it's all in your background, in your beliefs. So I think humor, I will avoid it totally because it's very hard to translate. Like Nick was saying, expressions. But I think the little flags, examples, just to make them resonate with your audience, and that they are not US-centric, they can be global. Just try to globalize your training or your e-learning for a global audience.
Right. And as you were saying, you're approaching it with you know, sort of the future use in mind when you're developing content. And this is in some ways the same advice we give anybody who's developing learning content is think with the end application in mind and think in a modular sense. So you know, the parts that will need to be swapped out for different audiences can be easily.
Yeah, I have an example of, it's not e-learning, it was a poster that we localized for different regions around the world. It was a global compliance poster for gifts and entertainment. And it was just a poster, and they have a, you know, about giving gifts and, you know, how legal, what is lawful to giving gifts and accepting gifts from vendors and customers. And we had to adapt that, not just the content to translate, but we adapted the colors of the poster or the images of the poster for other regions. I remember there was a globe in the middle that was the United States of America and, you know, Latin America. So for our Chinese audience, we actually move the glove around, so it will be the first thing that you see. Like the GIF was different for China or for Argentina. It was more like a bottle of wine. So just those little things, like images, the colors, is so important. So it resonates with the target audience.
Yeah, and so the role of the translation firm then is you're sort of I would say almost visually proofreading in some ways. So you're looking for those perhaps dissonant details that whoever created the content might not have seen the first time.
And I don't think AI can pick that kind of stuff up quite yet. So we work primarily within country linguists, depending on what the target market is. You know, Canada for French versus Europe, Brazil, you know, versus Europe, simplified mainland Chinese, or, you know, versus traditional or Hong Kong. And because by default, our model is set up with working with real human linguists immersed in the culture, they're going to pick up things like that as part of the localization process or the final QA process. We always go through whatever it is, a one-page memo, an e-learning course in 30 languages. We go through, you know, web page, email, a text message, whatever we're localizing. We always have a native speaker who does the final review. So it's not just translation, it's revision, proofreading, putting things together, and then final QA. And that's the whole localization, you know, package with a bow, right? But that's where we'll catch things because we of that element, which might be a good segue.
I don't know. AI, and I did want to speak to the elephant in the room, which is translation AI technology, perhaps competition. You know, we've been able to you know, put text in Google Translate for free for years. So I wanted to get your thoughts. You know, what's the best role and what's the place of technology in translation? You know, whether you know, maybe talk us through kind of what that looks like in practice.
Yes, well, I'm glad this was brought up. I wasn't sure. No, I'm just kidding. So you know, AI, it's a pretty big buzzword. But I mean, just a quick, you know, background. Machine translation has been around a really, really long time. It's not like a new concept. I think it goes back to like the mid 1950s, where we were testing some things through IBM, and it's essentially just not there quite yet. Still, it could be serviceable depending on the type of content. Some languages are better than others. Where we've seen the best use case so far has been with voiceover recording, so AI voiceover recording, not text-to-speech, and it's been getting better and better for certain languages, Spanish, French. It's not there yet for a lot of the Asian languages, but that seemed to kind of been the first, you know, dipping our toes in the shallow end based on what clients are looking for. But it is getting better. You know, and I think the auto captioning, there's some things that are speeding up the process. It's definitely something that we're monitoring and continually testing. But, you know, again, the human element, we believe, will always be a part of it, making sure that we do post-editing, whatever it might be, making sure that a native speaker, a professional linguist, is reviewing it for accuracy. The messaging is still going to get there, but a lot of the things we talked about already in this podcast, I don't think AI is going to be able to catch, you know, these cultural nuances and catch and adapt. But Maria, you might have some thoughts too on this.
Yeah, I think the challenging thing with AI and MT is bias. They train with all this data from the internet that unfortunately contains biases. So just an example, like a nurse and a doctor, even if the data that they are trained is English, which is gender neutral, you know, they still have those stereotypes. So when you translate that with AI, unfortunately, if you are using a language like Spanish or Italian, which is it's a gender language, you know, the nurse is always going to be a female. The doctor is going to be always a male. So I think that is the most problematic thing right now with AI and MT, that those biases are there because the data that they feed into, they already have the bias. So that is why they learn. So the human factor to catch those kind of things is very important. So, you know, post-editing, I think, is right now is, you know, the only solution to work with those systems, just to have a human to post-edit, to watch for errors and biases.
And I think, again, that's a super great point. Sorry, Miranda. No, it's a great point. And we're seeing some misconceptions where potential clients are thinking that AI is going to be a lot cheaper. We think the advantage is going to be more in the speed. And we think the influx of content being developed in English and source is going to lead to more needs for AI, you know, parse through and then post editing. But I think, you know, it will be less expensive. It won't be as good, but it's not going to be like as less expensive that I think people are thinking. That's been our conversation so far because of the post editing and needing to do it, you know, that massaging.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what AI can bring us in the localization world, because, like, for example, MT is very limited with context. So MT, when you translate with MT, only sees one segment, one sentence. So it translates a sentence without context about what is around. AI actually looks around the whole page or the whole, e-learning. So it's starting to translate with all that context. So I am looking forward to see how, you know, it develops in the future, because it gives you the greater picture compared with MT, that only is like little sentences and put them together in a translation. So I'm looking forward to see what it comes up.
Right. Yeah. So you have the machine translation as a tool. The AI is a perhaps more sophisticated version of that tool. But it sounds like what we're talking about is it can perhaps reduce the amount of time required certainly compared to manual, purely human translation. So you could drive costs down, but it's almost like the 80-20 rule applied here, because it can get you some ways toward the finish line, but that last mile or that last piece still needs a human to run quality control, it sounds like.
Yeah, and we've seen instances where it's just cheaper to translate it from scratch. So it depends, again, on the language, the subject matter. So it's a lot of factors. I mean, we'll look at everything case by case and try to provide options or point, you know, whoever we're talking to in the right direction. But again, I think your idea is right there. And it's almost like when someone's, you know, remodeling their kitchen. It's that extra, you know, 5-10% at the end that can make a big difference. You know, it's those final elements that it's really important. We don't see a way that can be skipped.
So, Maria, you mentioned a compliance poster as an example, and that got me thinking that a lot of materials that people work with in learning and development have specific terms of art, whether it's legal terms or whether it's technical language. So what's the best approach then when you have a project that has, you know, specific technical language, that it's accurately transferred to the final product after the translation localization? How do you manage terms that I mean, arguably, does the translator need to understand the terms of art? How does that work?
Well, I will recommend first a glossary where you extract those key terms and you translate them into the language first with context. I think a glossary is the first step, so everybody is in the same terms of understanding those key terms and what they mean. And then you can translate them. Second, using subject matter experts, because not every translator is an expert of everything. So you always look at subject matter expert and you involve them from glossary creation, and then provide context. I think is also very important to provide the translation team with that context when translating those key terms, like some guidance and some like style guides are really, really good to keep all that content in the same page. And I think my favorite of all, like everything is collaboration. I think some clients have client reviewers, and they usually are experts in the content that they are translating. So, like open communication before the translation partner, the translators, the client reviewers, I think is very important. So everybody is in the same page with the final localized product.
And just to add, languages are very, very preferential. So we do recommend if an organization, you know, has an in-country or subject matter expert or native speaker to get involved early on because of those preferences. So I'm really glad Maria brought up the glossary concept because that's something that it's almost like the foundation to building a house. It's something that we should really do, you know, early on in the process, establish those key terms, and it will save a lot of time later on if, you know, well, instead of sneaker, I want shoe, the translation's accurate. You know, there could be 17 ways to say popcorn in Spanish, and depending on where you're from, it's all popcorn, but, you know, what are the preferences? What is the best translation that this specific client and their tone and their market needs?
Right. Well, Nick, Maria, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. How can someone get a hold of you if they would like to talk translation localization?
Yeah, we're super flexible and would love to have a follow-up conversation with anybody or that might have a question or a sample quote or a pain point and what they're currently doing with translation or localization. Definitely can reach out to us through our website, www.interproinc.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Happy to help, share our contact information, happy to get on a call and just be a good consultative partner for you.
Right. Well, good to talk to you, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
This has been the Axiom Insights Learning and Development Podcast. This podcast is a production of Axiom Learning Solutions. Axiom is a learning and development services firm with a network of learning professionals in the U.S. and worldwide, supporting L&D teams with learning staff augmentation and project support for instructional design, content management, content creation, and more, including training delivery and facilitation, both in person and virtually. To learn more about how Axiom can help you and your team achieve your learning goals, visit axiomlearningsolutions.com. And thanks again for listening to the Axiom Insights podcast.